This is Reset. I'm Jen White.
I don't believe I'm gonna die because I got a bad heart. I don't believe I'm gonna die because of lung cancer. I believe that I will be able to die as a revolutionary in the International Revolutionary Proletarian Struggle. And I think that struggle is going to come.
That's the voice of Black Panther leader Fred Hampton. Tomorrow will mark 50 years since Chicago police officers shot and killed Hampton as he lay in bed at his West Side home. Fred Hampton was just 21 years old when he was shot and killed, but his legacy looms large in Chicago. Joining me now to discuss Hampton's life and work is attorney Jeff Haas. He represented Hampton and other Black Panthers at the People's Law Office. He's also the author of the book, The Assassination of Fred Hampton, How the FBI and the Chicago Police Murdered a Black Panther. Jeff, welcome to Reset.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So tell us just a bit more about Fred Hampton and how he became connected with the Panthers.
Well, Fred was a dynamic young leader. From the early age, he was a tremendous speaker. He memorized the speeches of Dr. King and Malcolm X, and he went to his church and listened, and he put together sort of the energy of a rapper with the vision and the cadence of a preacher. And somehow when he spoke to crowds, and you heard just a little bit of that in your introduction there, he really could move people, whether it was law students, whether it was Hispanics, Puerto Ricans, Appalachians, and of course particularly people in the Black community, whether it was welfare members or gang members. All of these people were very much affected by Fred was very effective in organizing them and reaching them and mobilizing them.
When did you first meet him?
I met Fred when I went to the speech that you played a part of when he came out of prison in the August of 1969. And he had been sent down there on a bogus charge of taking ice cream from an ice cream vendor, for which Edward Hanrahan, the ambitious prosecutor and likely heir to the original Mayor Daley, gave him 2 to 5 years. And he came back and spoke in a church, and my partner Flint Taylor and I were there. And I think I listened to him, and I listened to his story, and he made us all stand up, and then didn't made us, but it said stand up and say, I am, and I said, I am, and he said, a revolutionary. And at that point, I was a young lawyer for the movement, but I didn't consider myself in the movement. But by the fourth or fifth time, I was chanting and believing it as much as everybody else. And it was a really powerful, powerful speech. And I think that energy of Fred was why he was picked to be the chairman of the Black Panther Party. He was being considered for a national central committee of the party. And why he was targeted both by the local police and ultimately, we learned, of course, by the FBI.
Now, the Black Panthers based their work on a 10-point plan. Can you just explain how the plan worked?
Well, the 10-point plan was actually pretty basic. It included land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And they called for an end to mass incarceration, police brutality, and the drafting of Black people into America's wars. Some of those demands don't seem so crazy or so different from what Black Lives Matter and other groups are demanding today. And I think that's that format. It's partly a socialist platform, but it's partially saying these are human rights. We should all have the right to a decent education, to medical care, things that are very much prominent today. And the Panthers were not saying we're going to win a revolution. We want the people to demand those things. And right now today, I think people more and more are saying these are things we should be entitled to.
Part of Fred Hampton's legacy includes his organization of a multiracial alliance called the Rainbow Coalition. Who was a part of that alliance, and what were their shared goals that brought them together?
Fred, as you said, it was Fred Hampton, it was the Panthers, it was the Young Lords, a Puerto Rican group that started as a gang and ended up organizing against the urbanization and the kicking of Puerto Ricans out of the Lincoln Park area, and the Young Patriots, who were more or less immigrants who had come from West Virginia and Kentucky from coal mining families, poor Appalachians who had migrated to Chicago. And they suffered many of the same things. Two in particular, they suffered police brutality and really bad housing, as well as bad schools. And so they came together around these issues that affected all of their communities. And that was another way that Fred was a threat. And he also attempted to bring the gangs together in Chicago, particularly the Blackstone Rangers and the Disciples. And he met with the leaders. And he said, we should be doing things for our community, not not against our community. And it had some resonance. I can't say that everybody accepted it. The disciples did a little more than the Rangers. But that potential, I think, was what also really made him fearful in Chicago that he could create a new power base here.
Where do we see his legacy at work today in Chicago?
Well, I see the campaign and the amount of organizing that went into exposing and then getting the killer of Laquan McDonald prosecuted is one of the areas that we see it today. And here was a police killing. Of course, we ended up with a video of it, but the community didn't stop. Black Lives Matter didn't stop. Black Youth 100 didn't stop. Asada's Daughters. I'm here. All kinds of groups in Chicago came together, and they went not just to City Hall. They went to court. And the first Chicago policeman actually indicted for murder. And they kept that up, and he did get convicted. We also saw some of the remnants of how the police responded. The police chief covered up. The Fraternal Order of Police defended the shooting of Laquan McDonald 17 times. So we saw that, too. But I think that was one of the examples. I think the follow-through on what happened with the Burge torture cases, that not only did they get we get reparations for the victims, but actually not only did we get some money for the actual victims, but reparations for the families, a recognition by the city of Chicago that they allowed and condoned police torture of blacks. So I see that spirit continuing in that campaign against police brutality. We see it in efforts to end mass incarceration, to provide bail for people who have just been charged. So in a number of areas, I think the legacy is very clear. And also some of the militancy of young people today.
This is Reset, and we're talking about the life and work of Illinois Black Panther Fred Hampton. Tomorrow marks 50 years since he was shot and killed by Chicago police. Now, you were one of the attorneys who went after CPD and the FBI after Hampton's killing in lawsuits. It took more than a decade to settle, but in the process of getting those lawsuits through the court system, what was uncovered about the federal government's relationship to his death?
Well, I think we originally filed it when it turned out that the evidence showed that it was a shoot-in, not a shoot-out, 97 police shots to one Panther shot that was fired after the person was hit because it went up into the ceiling. And we exposed that and got the attempted murder charges dropped against the Panthers. We filed a civil suit against Hanrahan and the police. But in the course of this suit, in the course of the church committee uncovering things, and also it being exposed that one of the key people in the Panthers was an FBI informant, we showed that actually this was not just a local ambitious prosecutor leading the police. This was part of the FBI's COINTELPRO program, a clandestine FBI program that targeted the entire black movement, including Dr. King, who they attempted to blackmail him with tapes of supposedly an illicit affair, but particularly the Panthers. And J. Edgar Hoover gave directions to every FBI office that had a Panther to destroy, disrupt, and neutralize the Panthers by any means necessary, prevent the rise of a young messiah who could unify and electrify the masses. And we think that's who Fred Hampton was to the FBI, and we think they targeted him. Not only do you have those mandates, what we uncovered was a floor plan that the FBI informant actually provided the raiders, complete with not only the layout of the house where Fred Hampton, the apartment, but the bed where Fred Hampton would be sleeping. And sure enough, when we followed the trajectory of the shots, they went toward that bed. And as his fiancée, who was in bed with him, 8 months pregnant, reported, after they pulled her out of the room, they went back in, and one police officer said, "Is he dead yet?" And she heard two shots, and then she heard, "He's dead. He's good and dead now." And it turns out that Fred Hampton was actually killed by two parallel close-in shots to his head. So it really was an assassination. They went there with a mission. The mission started with the FBI.
What was the result of those lawsuits?
The lawsuits, well, after 18 months of trial, the judge tossed the case out while the jury was deliberating on the grounds that there wasn't enough evidence to go to the jury. We gathered the 33,000-page transcript, wrote an appeal in which we filed it, and the last sentence was power to the people. And fortunately, we got a very good opinion from the Seventh Circuit who said there was more than enough evidence to go to the jury on the federal conspiracy to kill Fred Hampton. And we got a new trial, and that eventually led to a settlement of $1.85 million for the families of Hampton and Clark and the other survivors, four of whom were actually hit with bullets, were wounded, and three of whom were illegally charged.
As we approach the anniversary of his death, what do you think the loss of Fred Hampton meant for the Black Panther Party and for social justice movements as a whole in Chicago?
I think it certainly frightened a lot of Black Panther members and all of us. If the prosecutor, who's supposed to use the law, can be in charge of police who murder somebody in their bed at 4:30 in the morning, what kind of justice can we expect? And I think in many ways people did somewhat leave the party. I think in terms of the city of Chicago, there were two legacies. One, I think on the negative side, I think gangs and drugs became more prevalent, absent the leadership of the Panthers and Fred Hampton in particular. On the other hand, a coalition came together, and particularly led by the Black community, that might have been divided on the Panthers, but were not divided on a young Black leader being murdered in his bed at 4:30 in the morning. And so that coalition of the Black community and liberal whites was actually the coalition that I think elected Harold Washington mayor some years later.
That was Jeff Haas, one of the attorneys who represented Fred Hampton. He's also author of The Assassination of Fred Hampton, How the FBI and the Chicago Police Murdered a Black Panther. Jeff, thanks so much for coming in.
Okay.